tonight we continue in our study of family and dusty reality. This is actually our 10th study on this particular topic. The last time we looked at catechizing and saw how central it is to our lives and to our responsibilities as fathers. Catechizing refers to religious instruction and all of life is religious, so in a sense catechizing touches every aspect of life. All of life should rest upon sound biblical doctrine, because sound doctrine touches everything and God has revealed it for that purpose. However, the way we normally use this term catechizing is we use it in a much more limited sense and restrict it to kind of specific main doctrines that we need to know and understand. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I want to talk today on education, which is much broader than just catechizing. It's a much broader subject, and look at that in a kind of dusty way. But I don't want to make an artificial distinction between catechizing and education so you get a false view in your mind that we've got these two separate watertight compartments. Never the twain shall meet or cross over. So you've got to realize there's a lot of fluidity in between these two terms. And the way I'm using them is catechizing was kind of more focused in on specific key doctrines that we need to know, whereas education is much broader. So that's how I'm using the terms. So I'm defining them in the beginning so you understand how I'm using them. Without, in your own minds, I don't want you making a very firm, closed compartment for each of these, because they do cross over in many ways. So we want to look at the dusty reality of what education looks like and see the relevant application to our daily lives. So what is the goal or the end of education? What would it be? So if we're thinking about educating and training and instructing, what is the ultimate goal in that? Okay. So it is. God is the focus, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to glorify God. That's the purpose and the goal of education, is glorifying God, which ultimately, how is God glorified? So He's glorified by how we knowing Him and doing His will. So we know who He is in truth, because He's shown us who that is, who He is, and then we do what He has told us to do. So that's how we glorify Him. So it's not just a matter of singing empty words. Education has to do with glorifying God, but that's how we actually glorify Him. And then, as Bill said, ultimately, when we're doing these things and knowing God as He's shown Himself to us and doing what He has said, the purpose of that is dominion. You see, the glory of God and dominion is pretty much tied together and should be in our thinking. True education is made up of two things: right thinking and right acting, or as Verdi said on his CD, orthodoxy and orthopraxy. Orthodoxy is right thinking, true doctrine, true understanding, and orthopraxy is right action, of knowing what to do in every given situation. So that's what education, that's the goal of education, those two things really. The only source for right thinking and right acting is God, and He has revealed all that we need to know in His Word. And thus the scriptures tell us that it's the fear of the Lord is the beginning, and it says both of these, beginning of wisdom and the beginning of knowledge. That's the starting place. And Psalm 111 and verse 10 says, you know, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and a good understanding of all those who do His commandments. And then Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. The key to attaining right understanding and doing the truth, orthodoxy and orthopraxy, is character. It's fundamental. So when we think about education, we're thinking God's glory, we're thinking His revelation for the purpose of dominion, but key to all of this is character. That's what's key to education, is character. Godly character. It's a massive misunderstanding to ignore the importance of character and focus upon so-called knowledge or information. And too much of education today, too much of what the world gets excited about, focuses upon knowledge. Focuses upon information as opposed to character. So you can have people who might have an incredibly high IQ but have no character, and we would tend to lean towards them and say that's an educated person. But I believe the Bible clearly shows how important character is in the whole concept of education, and we need to tie character in when we're thinking as parents about education. We need to tie this in tight to our own concept of education. So character is very important. It's vital. Godly character is quite a big subject in many ways, because you could find CDs that will talk about character, and then it'll divide up and show you all the different character qualities. And I'm not sure if there's an exhaustive number. I think every person who goes to the Bible and says, I'm going to pull out all the character qualities or characteristics, they'd probably come up with different numbers in the way they divide and cut it and stuff. And it's not important that we have an exact number. But you could sit down and you could teach on all these character qualities, and after 25 or 30 you're kind of saying, whoa, I've forgotten number four or whatever. Or you take those and you say, okay, now I'm going to try and apply these into my family, and the frustration can be intense as you throw your hands up eventually and say, well, it's impossible. This is, how am I going to get all these different things? So it can be confusing. But I think if we can break that down, I'm just going to mention three things. That if we can keep those in our mind, I think it goes a long way in establishing us in this true education and also understanding the focus of these character things we want. If we can remember those three, everything else I believe can somehow flow out of that or at least be encompassed in that, and we can, our thinking can be clear. And the three things are, there's honor, there's hard work, and there's humility. So there's three H's there, which makes for easy memorization. Honor, hard work, and humility. So those are critical character things. And tonight we're going to spend the rest of the time looking at honor. And Lord willing, next time we'll continue with this study. So honor. What does honor look like? What is honor? In this context, we're talking in the family context. What does honor look like? So in the family context, you've got when a child knows their parents' will and does it, that's honor. So that's, they're respecting it, they're doing it, they understand what is right, they're standing for what is right, and they're doing what is right. And honor has to do with authority. So straight away when you're dealing with honor, you're brought into this concept of authority. And honor is respecting authority and bowing to authority. That's what honor is. That's how you honor. That's how we honor God. That's how we honor any authority that is over us, by bowing to it and obeying it. What do you think is the key reason ultimately behind children honoring parents? What is the ultimate goal in that? There's a greater goal than just honoring their parents. And fundamentally, it's to get the child to honor God. In a boot camp, learning how to honor God and the very real dusty boot camp experience, which as boot camps are all very dusty experiences, the very real dusty boot camp experience in the family is them honoring their parents. And the goal is that they honor God. That's what the objective is. You see, we live in an age that practice selective honor in the family, if there's honor at all. Selective honor. That's the predominant mindset. That's the predominant understanding. That's probably the mindset that most of us as adults, grew up in our families, selective honor. And that passes also into the church. And so you've got this principle that was taught in the home, whether self-consciously or not, just by default, where people are taught selective honor in the home. You know, well, I realize that, you know, if I get caught doing that, I'm in trouble, but hey, I can get away with all these. So there's selective honor. Then that passes into the church, and so we have selective honor in the church. What does that look like? With respect to your honor to God, we have selective honor, and that's picking and choosing. So we pick and choose those passages that are easier or that we prefer for whatever reason and reject the rest. As God says, these people, they honor me with their lips. That's another way it's done. You honor me with your lips, but your heart is far from me. So we've got that, and we can clearly see that as we look around in the church. That is a fundamental aspect of our modern world. But if the family unit fails on this matter, the church reflects it. So when you look at the church and the church is disintegrating, realize that a prior thing has taken place, a whole shift of understanding, a whole shift of concept and way of behavior has taken place already in the family. And all we see now worked out in the church is what is already practiced and taught in the home, where there's selective honor, if there's honor at all. So honor is gone, and therefore there's no honor in the church, because people have not learned this fundamental principle of honoring God and honoring His word. And then this combined failure of the family, which impacts the church, and then we've got this downward spiral, and they in fact start to infect and feed one another as they spiral downwards together, as the church then is not calling the family back to the position but encouraging it in its wrong working, and the family is feeding back that fruit back into the church. And so you can see it's a imploding, self-implosion destroying mechanism. So honoring the family, as I said, is the boot camp for honoring God and being effective for His kingdom. Now the Ten Commandments are listed. There's a list. And how they've been understood fundamentally is that they basically are thought of as two groups. The first four commandments are man's responsibility toward God, and the six following commandments are man's responsibility in his relationships to his fellow man. And you cannot say one commandment is more important than the other. That's kind of, there's no such thing. What do you mean more important? You mean don't have to keep this one? So although they're listed out there, we mustn't think of them in an ascending order of binding nature or whatever. But there is a teaching mechanism in the commandments the way they list it. And the way God has listed the bottom six, which speak to our responsibility to one another, it is very important and noticeable that he starts off with this commandment, which I believe is key to the whole of society and the whole of the health and well-being of society and all relationships, is honoring, and children honoring your parents. So starting in the home, this is critical because that feeds into every relationship that we will have. So we need to see that as critical. So the fifth commandment, that's the one that starts off the list of our responsibility to other people. So we see how key this principle is to the whole of what we do in this life. Honoring of parents is fundamental to dominion, and thus it must be seen as a critical pillar in our concept of and goal for education. We've got to see that. This is critical. Honor is a critical aspect of education, because education is unto God's glory and unto dominion. That's what the purpose is, and honor is central to that. So is your child educated if he's not honoring you, even if he's in the 99th percentile of the SAT tests? Is he educated? Can't be. We can't accept that as education. We can't be thinking on that level and say, this person is educated, because the scriptures say, no, this person is not educated, because his whole life is not directed toward what is absolutely fundamental to the kingdom and to the passing on and the advancing of the kingdom. He's not educated. That's right, he is a fool. So it's easy to emphasize so many other things that we think point to meaningful education. Honor is willingly and cheerfully bowing your will to the earthly authority that God has placed over you. That's honor. I willingly and cheerfully bow my will to that. Christ honored his Father. How did he do that in the garden? Not my will, but thine be done. This thing that is absolutely obnoxious to me, this thing that is with everything in my being, I don't want to walk down that road. And yet, not my will, Lord, but thine be done. You see, there's a manifestation, a demonstration of honor in the way the scriptures understand honor. Remember when we talk about discipleship, I said that we need to teach the standards and then take small incremental steps towards those goals. And it's an important thing to emphasize now, because depending where you are in your own training and your own situation at home, you've got to realize that, you know, you might be a million miles away from this honor concept, and you're not going to get there overnight. So it's a process to get back there. You need to understand that. So it's a long, drawn-out thing. So don't forget about that discipleship message that we've already covered. But on the other hand, you've got to realize the importance of honor and start moving clearly and specifically in that direction back to what true education is about. Otherwise, you really don't have an understanding of education. So education is for the purpose of God's glory and dominion, which means doing God's will, which means living by every word from his mouth, which means dominion. That's what dominion is. So all these things, they tie together. However, there can be no dominion without honor. If you look at the history of Israel and the way the nation would disintegrate, you would trace that disintegration back to this principle of honor and lack of honor, and it spirals things down. Our own nation would be the same. When there's no honor, and you look at the church, if there's no honor in the church, there's going to be no dominion. Because that respect for God and respect for his word and submission to that word and buying your will to his word, it's not there, and therefore dominion doesn't take place. And so we see that very common in our day. So how important in your children's curriculum is this matter of them learning to honor you? It has to be absolutely critical. It has to be up there above every other subject, every other concept of knowledge and information. Possibly the greatest danger as a parent is to allow your words to become empty. That's a temptation we constantly face. Our words become empty. How do words become empty? Speak and there's no follow-up. And sometimes it's easier to give a lecture than to give anything else. And so the words, once again, it's the Charlie Brown, the adults. You never hear the adults speaking. It's always this ba 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 ba. And that's how the children, as soon as an adult starts to speak, that's all they're hearing. So we need to speak, and our words, choose our words carefully. But when we speak and we commit ourselves to speaking, we've got to realize, hey, I'm giving a whole theological lesson here. I'm giving a whole moral teaching just by saying, pick up that cup. I'm giving a theological lesson of the importance of my words. Because what you're communicating to that child, if you don't follow through and it just kind of runs off, is the word is empty. It doesn't mean anything. And so they're not honoring you, and you're strengthening them in their dishonor. That's what you're doing. You're strengthening them in their position. And what we're actually doing to our children when we do that, we're actually destroying them. You see, because sinful people, and we acknowledge, I'm not talking about necessarily lost, just sin in our hearts, sinful people, they need to feel the wall. They need to be trained and encouraged that this is an immovable thing. And it varies between personalities. The way they're going to test to see if that is an immovable thing is they're going to run into it. And some will run into it countless times to see, is it really immovable? Or if I just persevere, can I eventually break through? And one child might run into it once and, whoa, that's enough for me. That's the solid wall. And another child might say, you know, I'm sure I felt it then. I'm going to try again. And so we got to realize psychologically and mentally and theologically, we got to understand what we're doing there. We are putting up this wall so the sinful heart can feel that resistance and realize that that's part of God's planning in order to bring that sinful heart to at least a position of softness and pliability. When we allow that sinful heart to break through all the time, they are getting hardened and strengthened in that rebellion. They need to realize that you mean what you say, and that's the standard you hold, just as God means what he says, because that's the message we want them to know, that God's words mustn't be taken lightly. And God has placed me here as a very dusty physical presence to show you that his authority is real, and therefore my authority is real. And when I hold that authority, it gives you an awareness that, you know, I'm not going to play with that authority. So the sinful heart only gets the message when it has run into that wall and found out that it is indeed an immovable place. So when we allow dishonor or disobedience, we strengthen that rebellion. And we need to know that, because that encourages us to be consistent and take the effort. Because I don't know if children actually know how to read the timing, but many times the timing is always perfect when it's the most inconvenient time from the parent's perspective to deal with the issue. And then you want to be wise. You want to realize, I'm in the situation. If I'm going to give a command, am I able to follow it through? If not, you know, sometimes it's better just to pull back, unless it's a serious situation. But at other times, you give a command and suddenly I realize, okay, now we've got an issue. Now we've got an issue and I don't have the time. So I think you realize, well, I've got to make the time. Well, I don't feel like it. I'm tired. I've got to realize this is what I'm doing here is a theological issue. I'm teaching something that is fundamental to life and to the well-being of my child when I allow that to go past. So how do you train out bad habits? What are the scenarios? We've got bad habits. We've got to train these bad habits. It can be a young child, it can be a teenager. Right? Teach them good habits. What you've actually got there are habits. You need to realize that. We've got this way of doing things that a child has been doing. It could be for many years. And so now you've got to instruct on that and say, you know, we need to look at this. And I've just realized the way I've been interacting with you and the way I've been using my words has been wrong. And because this is the way it's got to be used. So you give instruction. And then if there's truly a bad habit, which the parent can assume the responsibility for to a large degree, if there's been the strengthening of a bad habit where honor is... Yeah, it's your bad habit. So you've got to realize that, and you can, you know, if it's been something where you've allowed the words to just become empty, you can say, you know, really, forgive me, I've presented to you a wrong manifestation of God's truth by the way I've done this. But now we're going to practice, because you want to give them a time to learn, because they've been living for X number of years in this way, and so there's no overnight change. So you're going to practice and say, okay, we're going to do a 10-minute a day hands-on practice, but also throughout the day we're going to practice this obedience, and I'm going to call you up to it, okay, get your attention, hey, look in my eyes, okay, this is what we're going to do when I'm going to speak to you, and I'm going to tell you this is what I expect you to do, I want you to do X, Y, and Z, and I want to see you do that. So you go through the practice, and you do real practical practice, very basic stuff, but in order to try and start to break down that habit, and let them realize in their own mind, yes, indeed, I realize this is how I behave. So then you establish how long that period of practice is going to be for, and you explain the clear related consequences. You say, okay, we're going to have a practice period, however long you decide that's going to be. It could be a week, it could be a month, depending on whatever your judgment is on the situation. And I'm going to show you, okay. And then there's going to be consequences for dishonoring me after that. But up until that, while we're practicing, I'm just trying to bring your attention around to the habit that you've got, and this habit is going to change, and we're going to work on it together to change it. So there's different ways that your word can be dishonored. Many different ways. You can't even begin to cover all the possible scenarios. There can be just blatant disregard. You say something and the child looks at you and says, yeah, right, and keeps going. Okay, that's blatant dishonor. And to my mind, that requires a much more firmer physical reprimand once you're into the practicing of it. And I mean, you know, done the practicing and have established all the clear guides. Then there's the forgetfulness. You know, tomorrow I want you to move the wood pile from there to over there because we've got some guys coming to work on the garden over there, and the child forgets about it. Oh, forgot. Say, okay. You want the repercussions to be connected. You say, okay, all right, well, you're going to have to do that tomorrow now. You're going to move the wood pile from there to there, and you're going to chop another whole pile of wood the same size as that one. Okay, so there's a kind of a connection. So that's called memory games, you see. It helps strengthen memory as far as not forgetting. So there's a willingness on the first one just blows you off. The first illustration I gave you, you tell them to do something and they just blow you off. The second one, at least there's a willingness to do it, and there's forgetting about it, or whether they just procrastinated and it was too late and now it can't be done. So it wasn't a direct challenge to your authority. It was more just immaturity. So you deal with those in different ways. And even that is 1,000 scenarios in case you get the wrong idea. You could have a faithful child who's always predictable, dependable, and will do it, and one day he forgets. Now, do you have to punish that child? Not necessarily. You know, every situation you weigh up and you decide, hey, there's context and there's this stuff. So there needs to be wisdom used as well. It's not just a rigid plan, but there needs to be the training. That's the goal. If a child is already trained in good habits and they forget, as we're all capable of doing, then the habit's there. That's my goal. That's what I want to get. And that's what I'm always aiming at. I'm trying to work with this child to achieve this goal. So, you know, I asked you to sweep the floor and you forgot, so I want you to sweep the floor and mop it now. So you connect the discipline, whatever it is. So the purposes of consequences is for training. And what you're trying to train are godly habits, which is another name for character. That's what it is. That's what character is. Character is just a habitual way of acting, a good way of acting, because everybody's got character. It's good character and there's bad character. And both are just manifestations of different things, but they're essentially the same. They're just habits of the way they've acted. So you've got bad habits, which have just got these practiced ways of doing the things in a bad way, and good habits are practicing and instilling it into you of doing the good thing and how to go about that. So that's what we're doing. Good character traits and bad character traits are both habitual ways of doing things. Right, that's a good point. So at that point, I would say that when you've got a child who's kind of, in a sense, you suspect there's passive resistance going on. So they're kind of doing enough where in their own mind they think they're going to just escape any kind of trouble. Then I think that's when we can bring in the testing mode and say, okay, this wasn't up to the standard, now I want you to do X because this is the standard I require. And if that's all clear, this is the standard I require and it hasn't been met, therefore I want you to do this. So then you're testing it. And you're always watching attitude, you're watching body language and all those things. If you've got at least compliance, for example, if you said, pick up that cup, if you've got at least that much authority, if they're going to do that, although he didn't see it on his own, but when you said, pick up that cup, and you've got a response, then that's one aspect. Okay, if you haven't got that, then you're talking about a whole different scenario. Okay, so let's presume that you've got that. So then what you want to do is lay out the instruction as to why. What is the objective? And we will cover this in one of the next messages, just with respect to orderliness and structure and stuff, how important that is. So you explain all that so that they understand. They don't have to necessarily agree with you at the end of it, but you're giving them your reasons and biblical basis for doing what you're doing and saying, this is how it has to function and these are my reasons why it's got to function like this. And so therefore that means when you're finished with something, you need to remove it and put it in the sink or the dishwasher, whatever you set up as the policy, and this is how it's going to function. So therefore, if I see this not being done, then we're going to increase what you need to do at that point, because I'm not going to stand with you until you're 65 telling you to pick up your cup. You understand? So, you know, they get on the page and they can see what you're doing, and then you would have in the connected repercussions is to say, well, we're going to train that, but this is what's going to happen in the future. For example, you know, stack the dishwasher. Well, I didn't stack the dishwasher. Okay, well, don't stack the dishwasher now. Just wash the dishes in the sink and dry them and put them away. The connection is related. It's the same kind of thing. It's not like, okay, you didn't pack the dishwasher. You're going to stand outside in the snow for 2 hours. You know, there's a connected repercussions. So you need to work those out on your own as to, you know, what will be best. And that's hard work. It's not easy to come up with a connected repercussion.
I was going to suggest, though, we can still make sure that whatever we're communicating, we can communicate kindly.
Yeah.
We don't have to choose to be commanding and imperative just because it's the weight of how we say it that carries the authority. It ought to be clear that, you know, but we can be kind. Whether it's a would you please or however, I don't know, unless you think otherwise, that's a problem to say it in a kind way, however you do it, you know, but we can be kind. Whether it's a would you please or however, I don't know, unless you think otherwise, that's a problem to say it in a kind way, however you do it.
So yeah, to realize the authority, you have the authority. You don't have to strut around to prove you've got the authority. And so if you can communicate in that way, you're building that relationship, I believe, even though, you know, it takes time because you've got habits, you've got ingrained patterns of thinking, you've got sinful hearts that, and so you know, you can expect resistance, but if your word starts to hold that place, and you can start on a few things, but it's much harder when a child is older, because there's a lot more freedoms or liberty, so to speak, than if you've got a little toddler. And it'll come in, we'll come to that point, which is...
I was just going to say, though, you know, you're talking about that grace period and trying to bring them along, you have a situation where, you know, the pattern has been laid down in the past where, you know, that's kind of free game to be able to say, to question it, that you know, maybe you could take that as the next step forward to maybe go ahead and sit down and say, well, this is, you know, now we're going to begin doing things this way. And there may be some time that I say please and some time that I don't, but, you know, at no time am I seeking to be overbearing, but your response should, you know, to use that just as an opportunity to sit down and talk to them about, well, yeah, sometimes maybe I will, but other times I won't, but your responsibility is this regardless, and that might be a step toward, you know, in that progression.
And also remember, each child is on their own track. You know, we don't want to develop the herd mentality either, where everybody is the same. You know, my father grew up in a household where they didn't have a father. He had died quite early on, and then there was 7 children. And if somebody did something wrong, and the mother would flip, and they would all get a whipping, just line up. And because he was the youngest, they would push him in front, so he would get most of it. So, you know, you're just all treated the same. And that's an extreme case. But our children are on different tracks, and we need to realize that liberty must be tied to honor. So the liberty that people have, as that liberty expands, liberty should be very tight in the beginning. It means their freedom and their ability to do stuff. And liberty must only increase to the proportion that there's honor, because honor is the maturity. And so if somebody is not honoring you, they cannot have the liberty. You cannot give them the liberty. They do not know what to do with liberty. They're just going to get up to all kinds of nonsense. So if they are not honoring you in your presence, please tell me, what are they going to do when you're not even around? Do you understand? That's the mindset. So when there's no honor, there's an incredibly short leash, figuratively speaking. I'm not suggesting you put your children on leashes. But figuratively speaking, it's a very short leash. And they need to know that the honor is in proportion to their liberty. And then so you can have children on different tracks. There's different spheres of liberty, and it's not necessarily just age. You can have an older child on a tighter leash than a younger child, because there's honor in the younger child, and so there's. But if there's no honor, there should be no liberty, because that's an important connected thing. So, you know, to be out of your sight, to be out of your control and oversight, there shouldn't be that liberty to do that, because liberty is tied to maturity, and maturity is tied to honor. So to give liberty and freedom to someone who dishonors your word is to harden them in their rebellion. You see, liberty flows from self-government, when they govern themselves. And I assure you that there is no self-government in a person's life if they're not bowing to the authority over them. There's no self-government either, because that is a clear manifestation of bowing is to you. And the consequence of that is so that they bow to the word, and their conscience and their heart starts to walk in righteousness. Even the older child, I think you've got, as long as you're presenting it in that package, you know, it's the instruction, it's being in control, and it's administering it in control, the correction and that, and a consistently, that I believe that, because sometimes a strong-willed child, their insecurity and their naughtiness is sometimes a manifestation of their insecurity. And the reason they're insecure is because they keep pushing through the boundaries, and they're not quite sure where the boundary is, and so they don't know how to stop pushing. And when they keep pushing against that wall, you know, I've seen where a child will say, I feel secure now because I know there's a wall there. So if it's dealt in that package of the instruction and love and care and in control, I believe, to my mind, that would be the answer to driving the foolishness out of the heart. And as long as there's no personal character sins, father and the son have sinned against each other. he's lost his temper and whatever, and so there can be that kind of resentment. So you need to go back as a parent and try and put all those things right, to try and break down the, if there's stuff that you as the father need to put right, then you need to put that right and say, you know, forgive me, I did X, Y, and that was wrong. So in your thinking, when a child doesn't honor your words, you must be thinking, this child is asking for tighter controls. That's what they're asking for. They're asking to be under closer supervision, liberty to be reduced. So that's how we think about it, and you say, okay, well, I'm going to have to pull in those boundaries. And so that's how we think, so that we have the courage and the energy to do that. And because what's the goal? The goal is maturity. You want self-government. You want people who are effective, who can take responsibility for their actions and their behavior, and can be trusted to do that. That's what we're trying to raise. We're not just raising children. We're raising soldiers to be effective in this battle. And so these are critical tools, I believe, even as dusty as they are. But this is what we're trying to communicate. And I believe this is how we do communicate it to our children, by keeping this consistent standard. So if we do not train on this matter of honor, we are not educating our children. And thus we ourselves are at odds with God's purposes and God's whole plan of dominion. So we find ourselves, the purpose of our children is to in fact undermine the kingdom rather than be productive in the kingdom. So fundamental to education is honor. It's the first aspect that we looked at, education, character, and honor. And we'll look at the others next time, Lord willing. Are there any other questions or comments? That all comes into it, you know. Eventually it all comes into your whole time management, your whole perception of what are priorities, what can be done, what can't be done, because it all plays into our ability to accomplish these goals. And so that starts to become a thing, okay, well, what can we fit in to realistically accomplish this product? If I'm going to make it at this quality, how much time do I need to put into it in this context?
Being a father is a dusty job.
It's very dusty. And particularly as we're trying to unlearn our indoctrination, learn the true teaching, and apply it to our growing children. You know, if we could just stop things and put a hold on time and movement, it would be easier to catch up.